Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Ari Show. I am your host, Vegan Ari, and I am joined today, as always, by my peachy husband, Miko Alon.
Hi guys.
Thank you everyone so much for listening. We have a fabulous show in store for you today. We're going to open up the show talking all about current events and politics and the latest in the coronavirus crisis. And then we're going to move on to the new vegan product segment. This week, we'll be tasting vegan drumsticks by a company called Beleaf. I'm so excited. We love Beleaf. We actually have tried a bunch of their stuff. So if this is as good as the other stuff, it'll be very exciting. And then we'll be closing out the show with vegan animal rights news. Now, before we get started, I just want to encourage everyone, if you want to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, please do so on Twitter. I am at Vegan Ari. Miko is at Miko Alon, or use our hashtag Vegan Ari Show. And remember, if you like our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you wouldn't mind helping us spread the word about our show, that would be so appreciated. We are trying to get the word out there. We're trying to get more subscribers. So if you love our show, you know, if you want to give us a Facebook post or a tweet or a retweet or tell a friend, we would be so thankful. So anything you can do in that arena, thank you for that. Now, Miko, let's give the people what they come here for. There's a lot to get through in this opening segment. As our listeners will know, the past few weeks, I've been going over the numbers regarding coronavirus infections and fatalities in the United States and comparing them to the week before. Obviously, the country is still going up in terms of these numbers, which is very tragic. But as of last week when we recorded the show, there were 176,000 people infected with the coronavirus in the United States. That's the official number. We know that it's probably much more. Right now, we have crossed the million mark. We're now at almost 1.2 million people in the United States infected with coronavirus. This is hundreds of thousands of more infections than any other country in the world. The United States leads the world in infections by leaps and bounds, sadly. And in terms of fatalities, at the time that we were recording last week, there were 54,958,000 coronavirus deaths. There are now more than 68,000 deaths from coronavirus in the United States. So obviously very tragic, and the numbers keep going up. This was another week in the country that felt like a year. Lots of crazy shit from Donald Trump and the administration. Lots of troubling news from around the country. I think I want to start out by the fact that, you know, I've spoken in the past on the show about how disturbing I find it that Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who has zero qualifications to be working in the White House, is now being tasked with really overseeing the national response to the coronavirus. I mean, we found out a couple weeks ago that he was in charge of the national stockpile of ventilators and PPE and stuff. And he is, you know, essentially running the show. And this week, he came on one of the news shows and literally said that our response as a country to the coronavirus is a great American success story. And Trump has been echoing this in his rhetoric, saying that we had the best response and, you know, everything with him is always the best. And this is just flat out lies. The United States has had the worst national response. And it gives me no pleasure to say this, by the way, even though I hate Donald Trump and think that he is the most criminal and corrupt president in the history of the country. It gives me no pleasure to say this, but our national response has been the worst in the world, which is why we have 1.2 million people infected, which is why we've had nearly 70,000 people die. And so Jared Kushner going on TV and saying that this is a success story, I think that this is so offensive to the families who have lost people, to the hospital workers that are showing up every day and risking their own safety and their own family safety by exposing themselves to the coronavirus. I understand that it's an election year, and I understand that Donald Trump wants to win in November. But to me, this is fucking offensive. This is not the way to do it. I mean, lying to the American people and trying to say that we've done such a great job. This is the biggest crock of shit and the most offensive shit, I think, quite frankly, during this whole crisis so far to come from this administration. I'm totally disgusted.
I mean, every time Donald Trump speaks, I keep thinking that when this crisis is behind us, we need to have a Nuremberg-style tribunal for this administration for their willful, sabotaging of our national response. Because let's be real. The reason that we have the numbers that you mentioned is because when this crisis began, Donald Trump blocked efforts to establish proper national testing because he didn't want the numbers to be made evident and that we were facing at the time an epidemic that rapidly became a pandemic. You look at the difference in there were two countries that this week announced that they had contained the coronavirus crisis. One was New Zealand and one was Vietnam. Now, Vietnam has 96 million people, and they were able to do that through aggressive testing and isolating, and we were never able to establish those efforts in this country because by the time testing was underway, that effort was botched, and we are going to be dealing with this crisis for longer than anyone else. But there is something so utterly obscene when this week the official death toll surpassed all the U.S. casualties in the Vietnam War, and practically on the same day, Jared Kushner is saying this is a great American success story. And it just continues Donald Trump's pattern of saying whatever bullshit comes into his mind to try to pretend that is reality. And maybe his cult-like followers believe that, but at some point, I will predict reality is going to slap all those people in the face because you know what? You can't hide death. You can't hide illness. You can try to pretend you're doing your best, but you look at any of these graphs that show the growth of cases around the world, the United States, the curve towers above all of them. And at the end of the day, someone is responsible for a national response. And in this case, it's Donald Trump who blocked all the experts and their advice. That's why we are in this catastrophe.
I mean, look, I've said this before. And Meghan McCain said this today, this week on The View. Maybe she listens to the Vegan Ari show. I don't think so. But I've said, Harry Truman says the buck stops here, which means, you know, again, it's like another way of saying heavy is the head that wears the crown. Like you want to run this country. You want to be the president of the United States. Then you, the responsibility is on you. Even though he said, I take no responsibility, which is just absolutely disgusting and obscene for the president to say that. It does. Lie with you, the responsibility. And, you know, we see the administration now trying to, you know, just blame China. A couple weeks ago, it was the World Health Organization that they hated. Now it's China and the Chinese government. And you can see them trying to say that we're in this situation because the Chinese government, kept information from us, which whether they did or they didn't, we had enough time to prepare and we didn't prepare. They knew in January what was going on. We've seen the memos and the emails. And so we know that he knew. And they wasted all that time downplaying it. So regardless of whether China was or was not forthright with us in the very beginning, there was enough time that if our federal government was being run responsibly, we would have had tests in February. We would have had contact tracing. We would have had people isolated. We would have called for a lockdown earlier. And this wouldn't have gotten so out of control. You know, there are other countries. I mean, I always point to South Korea because they had their first recorded infection on the same day as we did. And they had a completely, you know, different response. And now they're nowhere near where we are in terms of infections and fatalities. So he can try and shift the blame and try and, you know, do that, whatever. At the end of the day, though, the lion's share of the rampant amounts of it, how this virus was allowed to just spread unmitigated, it lies with him and his administration and their complete incompetence and ineptness with which they operated.
Right, because Trump thought he could just wish away the coronavirus as long as we didn't have any numbers to prove it. And as you said, the entire world faced the same situation. You know, it's clear that we know that the Chinese government tried to initially cover up the news within the country, but the whole world learned about this at the same time, and
right.
other countries took proper steps. We know that Donald Trump, you know, fired the pandemic response team. They had a pandemic response plan from the Obama administration that was ignored. They also fired, ahead of this crisis, the CDC had an official specifically in China because they know that there's been past issues of transparency with the government to monitor signs of new potentially infectious diseases, and they pulled that person out. So the responsibility for the catastrophe rests squarely on this man. There's no doubt about that.
And you know, you said that we're going to be dealing with this much longer than other countries, and I agree with that, not just because of the failed response from the federal government, but also, I mean, we're now in a situation where half of the states in this country are starting to reopen. And this is in complete ignorance of what Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx's team have told us, which is that we shouldn't start reopening until we have 2 weeks of the curve going down, until we have proper testing in place, until we can do contact tracing and that sort of thing. Nobody has enough tests. We know that. And no one's curve has been going down for 2 weeks. I mean, some states, it looks like it's flattening out. But you have states like Georgia and Texas and Florida, some of these states where the curve is still going up and they're reopening. And then you see these protests erupting at, you know, I mean, I couldn't believe what I saw this week at the Michigan State House. You had these people with semi-automatic rifles barging into the State House. The governor had to be taken to a secure location and protected by police. And these people are screaming and ranting and yelling. And I'm going like, it is the United States is, I think that we are kind of screwed because between half of the states opening up, between the fact that we still don't have enough tests, even though we're weeks and weeks into this pandemic, the failed national response, I think what's going to happen is, and I'm sad to say this, I think the virus is going to burn through the population. And I think at the end of the day, we're going to have more devastation here from the virus than anywhere else in the world because of our ignorance, because of our selfishness, because of the fact that even though we brag to the rest of the world how we're the richest nation in the world, we still don't have proper social programs to sustain a crisis like this. I think we are headed for real devastation and loss of life from this. And these people protesting, I am just disgusted. I mean, that's the only thing I can say. I am disgusted. I think it also, the people protesting are, I'm sorry, but they're white people. I mean, can we talk about how we live in two different countries where if you're white, you're allowed to storm a state house and threaten a governor? Could you imagine if those people had been black or of Middle Eastern descent, what the police's responses would have been? It would have been devastating.
No, it's, I mean, that's the most outrageous thing is that here you have this crowd, because let's face it, these are Trump supporters. We see it from the signs.
Yeah, sure.
You know, these are the people who have always been foaming at the mouth and saying, oh, blue lives matter. Why can't, you know, black Americans just follow the rules? Here they are screaming in cops' faces, exercising every white privilege that they have.
With
I could not believe that we have people with assault weapons marching in state capitals, screaming in people's faces when we have, you know, we have black citizens' children being shot at playgrounds for having a toy gun, people on their own backyard minding their own business being shot by police.
I mean,
like,
listen,
this just tells you that the whole argument that blue lives matter that we hear from these people, it's just bullshit.
These
people couldn't handle being inside and eating pizza for 2 weeks, and they're trying to riot in the streets. I just want to say this. I think that when we talk about why these states are reopening, it is a part of this tragic pattern that we have talked about in the past of the Republican contempt for science and for expertise. We have two things happening here. First is a fundamental misunderstanding or willful ignorance of how infectious diseases spread. Yes, they spread first in cities and more populous states. And the thing that the red states seem to be, their leadership seems to be completely unwilling to face, is the fact that the coronavirus pandemic came there slower, and it's starting to peak now, and they're opening their states at exactly the wrong time. We already saw Governor Abbott in Texas ordered the state to reopen on Friday. They have today the highest peak in cases in Dallas County. Like, they are setting themselves up for a recipe for disaster. And one reason they're able to do that is because we have no one at the very top who's going to give the country a unified message that says, listen to the experts. It's like bullshit and contradictory messaging come from Trump, which again, as always, is simply fueled by two things: how he did in the last 24-hour news cycle and how this might all affect his reelection. And it is devastating to watch.
It's that whole thing when they say, you know, you see the train coming. That's what it's like, you know. And what's bizarre to me about it is that this is a Republican president, a Republican administration. It's the administration. It's Fauci and, you know, Birx who are saying we don't determine when we reopen. The virus needs to determine when we reopen. And you see them totally flouting, like you said, the data and the science and reopening anyway. And I mean, I read something today that the state of Missouri said on Monday concerts are going to resume. Concerts, like rooms of people, of hundreds, thousands of people. And I'm just going, that's why I'm saying this has been a completely a failed effort by the national government. There's been no real leadership. There's been so much back and forth. One minute it's I have total authority. The next minute the states have the authority. One minute it's take hydroxychloroquine. The next minute it's something else. One minute it's, you know, let's spray Lysol in our lungs. I mean, it's just been chaotic and there's been no cohesiveness. I mean, even yesterday, which I have an issue with this, but, you know, George W. Bush released a video, which is it's not of him speaking, but it's his voice and basically calling for national unity. And people are saying, wow, like people are actually looking to George. I mean, it bothers me because I do feel like there's been this effort in recent years to rehabilitate his reputation. And I'm like, why are we doing that? The man was a piece of shit. But I think that it just goes to show what a complete garbage person, trash, disgusting dumpster human being Donald Trump is, that people are looking to George W. Bush for leadership. It's been a disaster. I'm just shocked at what I see. I'm shocked that I see people in Piedmont Park in Georgia all hanging out, no masks, no big deal. I saw people in Central Park, same thing. You have the mayor of Huntington Beach right here in California, about 45 minutes from where we live. He wants to sue Gavin Newsom, our governor, for saying that they have to shut down the beach because last weekend there were all these people on the beach. I mean, this is the ignorance and the selfishness that is going to allow this virus to rip through our population. And it's I'm just so sad by it. It's horrible. It's horrible to watch. I do want to go back for just a second to the protests. I mean, I don't want to, like, you know, but I just want to point out, like you said, like we were talking about the white privilege and also the racism. I just want to point out one thing. Donald Trump said of these people that stormed the Michigan Capitol building with semi-automatic rifles, he says they're good people. They're just angry. You know what he says of Colin Kaepernick, who peacefully kneels to protest police violence? He calls him a son of a bitch. Okay? So if you can't see the racism, the disgusting, ugly, blatant racism of Donald Trump, it is because you choose not to see it, because it is right there. He calls these people good people. It reminds me of when he said about the Nazis.
Very fine people.
Very fine people marching in Charlottesville. And trust me, I have seen swastikas at these protests. I saw someone who was holding a sign with the words that were above the Auschwitz concentration camp. I mean, these people are fucking white supremacists, racists, and these are his people.
And talk about, you can also see how racism and white supremacy permeates the response to this crisis, because you look at the data that we have from all over the country. Disproportionately, people who are sick and dying are people of color.
That's right.
Especially, you know, our African-American communities. And look at Georgia. 80% of hospitalizations and deaths have been all African-Americans. And you see the governor urging to reopen everything to business as usual. Black lives...
The white governor.
Yes, the white governor. Black lives do not matter to Republicans. We saw that in cases of police violence and systematic racism in the justice system, and we're seeing it here.
I mean, it does make you wonder if the tables were turned and it were white people who were disproportionately dying from this, you know, virus, would we see these protesters?
Can I tell you what we will be having? There will be no protests, and all the white people will be getting special checks from the government, and the response will be entirely different because this is a crisis mostly for communities of color and for poor people. Rich people can stay holed up in their houses
That's
forever.
Right. That's right.
It's again, this lays bare the real ugly foundation of this country.
We live in two different countries.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a map of New York City this week that was color-coded based on coronavirus infections and deaths, and all of Manhattan was lighter than the Bronx, lighter meaning that it was they were shaded, like if it was lighter it was less, if it was, you know, darker it was more. All of Manhattan had less infections, less deaths than the Bronx, than Brooklyn, than Queens. I mean, why is that? It's because that's where poor people live. That's where people of color live. And those people don't have the privileges that people in Manhattan have, like being able to stay at home. So a lot of those people have to go to work. A lot of those people are the people who work at the supermarket or, you know, work in the hospitals or whatnot.
I just want to go back to the obscenity that you see these people, these Trump crowds, these people who have been so contemptuous of the Black Lives Matter movement, who are practically spitting in cops' faces and foaming at the mouth. When you think about the obscenity of having a child shot in a playground for, you know, playing with a toy gun.
You're talking about Tamir Rice.
Tamir Rice or Eric Gardner, you know, suffocated to death while selling cigarettes. And these people are flaunting their white privilege in these state houses, and like the ugliness of the fact that they can't go to the fucking Cracker Barrel or the nail salon. Like, is this all these people I'm struggling to understand, how did the Republican, like, what poison did all these people drink, or was it always there? Like, what has Trump brought out in these people? Like, where's your sense of national unity? We were talking about this week, you know, during World War II. People were asked to sacrifice so much. You know, people sent their fathers and their sons to war. People had victory gardens. They sold their pots or gave their pots and pans to the government to melt down to be able to fight in the war. Here, these fucking people can't sit on their couches and watch television.
They're suing the state governor because they can't go to the beach.
And just to clarify, I understand that there's obviously enormous economic challenge that people face because people can't work.
Of course.
But the fact that our government can't respond to that by saying, you know what, we're living in an unprecedented crisis, we're going to start taxing billionaires so that ordinary people have money. And
but
instead,
again,
instead of saying, you know what, all the communities of color and the poorest people and the people who do all the work, they are, you know, basically sacrificial offerings for the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
And honestly, I feel like the poorest people in the country are not the people that I see protesting.
Of course not.
It's that's not it. Like that protest in Huntington Beach, I'm sorry, but that was a bunch of like upper middle class white people who were just upset that they couldn't go to the beach on the weekend. What that was.
You know what? We recognize those faces, those like, you know, screaming faces from the Trump rallies. And also, these are not spontaneous protests, as people may know. These are things that are being deliberately organized by different right-wing groups to try to force the states to reopen. But it is quite the extraordinary thing. I don't know that we have actually, take a moment to pause on this. Literally in Michigan, the governor had to be protected by police and taken to a secure location because people with assault weapons came to the state capitol. What the fuck kind of country are we living in that the president of the United States doesn't say, that needs to stop now?
What kind of country are we living in where the president of the United States doesn't say, that's terrorism?
No, he
that's
says,
what it is.
They're great people.
Right. It's terrorism.
Donald
They're terrorists.
Trump is a person made entirely of feces.
I mean, we did. Okay. Miko and I produced a documentary where about the Shack 7, which were six animal activists who were sent to prison and branded terrorists because they ran a website, okay? They ran a website protesting Huntington Animal Life Sciences. They were branded terrorists. There were no guns involved. They didn't commit acts of violence. All they did was run a website. All they did was use their freedom of speech. Their branded...
That is actually, that's actually what these people, these right-wing groups are doing, right? They are inciting protests. Like, that's what the, ultimately the Shaq case was about, allegedly inciting terrorism. Even though they didn't incite terrorism, but they called for protests.
But these people didn't show up at state houses with guns. They didn't do... Like, they were running... They were sent to prison. But these people who are showing up with army-grade weapons to the point where a governor has to be protected... The president calls them good people. I am. It's just. It's absolute. It's just shocking. The hypocrisy in this country. It's disgusting. And I think that when we're in a situation where the curve hasn't started even going down, where we don't have enough tests, and where half the states are already starting to reopen. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I think that this is going to spell disaster for our country. It's very, very sad that we don't have, that we're not listening to the science, the data, to the doctors. I don't know what to say.
Like, take Texas, for example, take Texas and Georgia for the moment. When these states are now reopening, let's say that we have a huge spike in infections and deaths. Then the governors do what? They order everyone to lock down again? Like, are they going to do that? Are people going to listen to them? At what point are people going to realize that the people giving them advice, their leaders in those states, have no fucking idea of how to manage this crisis? It's going to be, I think, as you said, there's a very strong likelihood they're just going to say, fuck it.
Yeah.
Just let people get sick and die because they don't care about the people who are disproportionately doing the getting sick and the dying.
Now, I want to talk about something else that happened this week with regards to the coronavirus, but also how this relates to animal agriculture. So Donald Trump refused to use the Defense Production Act, which basically gives the president the power to tell companies, you need to make this. Like, in other words, during other times, of war, it gave different presidents power to say to car companies, you need to produce tanks, or to say to, some other company, you need to make bullets during, And so a lot of people were criticizing, and I think rightfully so, President Trump for not doing the same thing to say to companies, because we didn't have enough PPE for our hospital workers to say you need to produce masks and you need to produce other things that people need to wear to protect themselves in hospitals from getting infected. Wouldn't use it for that. But this week uses the Defense Production Act to force meat packing facilities and slaughterhouses to stay open because there's been so much coronavirus infection amongst slaughterhouse workers and meat processing workers that these plants were shutting down, and they said that there were going to be meat shortages. So he uses the Defense Production Act to force these people to come to work, to knowingly expose themselves to getting infected with coronavirus just so that we can have bacon on our shelves. I am, as an animal rights activist, as someone who just cares about workers' rights, I find this so absolutely despicable. I don't even know what to say. We know the reason why these workers are becoming infected. They're becoming infected because they're made to work very close to one another. They're not even given enough time to take bathroom breaks. There was a story last week that they don't even have enough time because the lines move so quickly to cover their noses and their mouths when they sneeze and cough. This is why, to date, I looked it up. Nearly 5,000 employees of the meatpacking industry have contracted COVID-19. And the numbers are growing. I mean, there was just a story just today that just this week, nearly 900 employees, 40% of the workforce at a Tyson Foods processing plant in Indiana tested positive for the coronavirus. I mean, these are the types of numbers that we're talking about, and he's forcing these people to come to work.
Yeah, can we just talk about how this is going to end? Let's say that we have a similar situation in another plant where you have almost 1,000 cases of people being sick, half the workforce sick. At some point, the workforce is going to run out.
Well,
not to mention that if you're forcing people to work as sick, they will put COVID-19 on the meat and the chicken and whatever they're processing. This is such a recipe for catastrophe that the fact that no one has talked this orange imbecile out of it, I don't understand.
Well, they're saying that even though he's using the Defense Production Act and forcing people, plants to stay open and whatnot, that plants are struggling to stay open anyway because people are sick, you know? And it's just, to me, it's just, what the hell is going on here? And like, for what? There's no human requirement to eat meat. People can get their protein from something else. You can fucking eat beans. You could eat peanut butter. You can eat I mean, come on. I just think that this is like PPE is a necessity. Okay. And people at those plants, to my knowledge, were not coming down with coronavirus. PPE is a necessity for the hospital workers. Meat being on supermarket shelves is not a necessity. There is a million other things that people could eat to get the same nutrients that they would be getting from meat. Meat is also so detrimental to public health. It's one of the leading causes of climate change. Obviously, the 99% of the animal cruelty in the country comes from these places, factory farms and slaughterhouses. I'm floored by the fact that he would invoke the Defense Production Act to keep these Tyson plants open, but not use it to create PPE for our hospital workers. I mean, if this doesn't show you the failed leadership of this president, I don't know what does. All right, Miko. Well, we've ranted quite a bit. We were a little bit all over the place. Were we cohesive?
I think so.
All right. Well, okay. What do you say we lighten the mood a bit and taste some vegan drumsticks?
Let's do it.
Okay. Yay, new vegan products. Okay, so today we are tasting vegan drumsticks by Beleaf. Now, ladies, if you don't know about Beleaf, it's time you get edumacated because, girl, I love this company. They're a vegan, what would you describe? Like a vegan food company that makes plant-based alternatives to everything from, I mean, they have a tuna alternative. They have an egg alternative.
And then a bunch of chicken alternatives.
Now, to date, first of all, their tuna roll, it doesn't sound good when you say they have this tuna product that's fucking so good, I swear. And it comes in like a roll. It's not really attractive when you buy it, but if you make it, it's great. But to date, the most impressive thing that I've tried from Beleaf is they have these, I think I've talked about them before, these vegan fried eggs. Girl, it has the yolk, it has the, I don't know how they do it, but they come frozen and then you just cook it up, you fry it up on your stove. It's, you have it all the time. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's delicious. It's like a ready-made fried egg. You just heat it up on a skillet and you're done.
So I don't know how widely available their stuff is right now. We find it mostly at our local vegan market. But if you can get your hands on some of the Beleaf products, you should try them. I think you'll really be impressed. So we found these drumsticks at Besties, our local vegan market, and we thought we would give these a go. Now, Miko, what did you do with these?
So these are basically, they come frozen. You thaw them in the refrigerator overnight, and then you pan fry them. Now, I do have one note for Beleaf. These do not come with any kind of sauce. And wings are usually either tossed in like, buffalo sauce or barbecue sauce. That would be a good thing to add here.
Okay, so these are just plain, and then you have to use sauce to cook it in.
Right, so I pan fried these crispy, and then we just have different sauces to dip into, kind of, so we can taste the actual flavor of the chicken.
And what is the... Because has a bone, so what is...
There's a little bamboo stick in there.
Oh, cute! All right, let's try this and see what we think. Okay, I'm going to pick it up just like... Oh, the bamboo is a little... All right, here we... Ooh, it's heavy. All right, here we go. Oh my God. Beleaf has done it again. That is so good. Oh my, I can't believe it. I honestly can't believe it. My one note is that this little stick that it's on is a little flimsy. So that's a little weird. But the texture of this drumstick. Oh my God. I mean, this is like the text. I can't get over how the texture of this is so much like meat. This is crazy.
What's, I think, to me most impressive here is the skin. It has like a tofu skin that kind of mimics, I guess, chicken skin, which is very good, very crispy. I love the flavor. I think it's a little bit juicy in the center. Like, it's not as crispy as some other wings, but the flavor is excellent.
I think this is excellent. I get what you're saying about it being, you know, juicy or whatever, but this is really good.
I'm going to try it with the hot sauce.
Like, the texture of it and the flavor of it is very, very good. And yeah, my only note was that, I've had, you know, vegan chicken wings where the quote unquote bone is a wooden stick. I think using bamboo is cute because bamboo is a very sustainable material, but it's kind of flimsy. So you can't really, you don't have something like hard to hold it, you know, together. But the flavor of it, I mean, if you tossed this, and I wouldn't eat this because it's spicy, but if you toss this in like buffalo sauce or, you know, and put some ranch or whatever, or, oh my God, girl, this is like the perfect buffalo wing. This is delicious.
I also think that if I wanted to, in retrospect, make a recommendation on how to cook this, I think that if you have a deep fryer, obviously that would be the best because then you would get the crispy interior. I'd be curious to make these in the oven and see how that would turn out.
Or what about making these in an air fryer?
That could be something.
That could be really good,
too. That's my only thing. Literally, everything else about this is an A+, but I wish that it wasn't quite so juicy in the middle.
Now, it says that these are made from soy and wheat, and that a single serving, which I don't know what that is, has 11 grams of protein, only 2 grams of fat, even the sodium. I mean, 60 milligrams of sodium for a processed product is not that much. Like, trust me, look at the sodium at some other products and you'll be shocked. So if you're, you know, watching that stuff. But I think this is, I have been so impressed with the Beleaf products. And my only note to them is that some of the packaging on some of the products is not, you know, like the way that the egg comes in the frozen, it's just not, it looks weird. The tuna roll, it doesn't look very attractive. But the taste of these products and the way they perform when you cook them up, these are great. These are just excellent. So well done, Beleaf. Again, we tasted the vegan drumsticks. I am very impressed, Miko. This to me is an A+.
I concur. My only note is, though, please provide a sauce.
Well, but why? You can go and get your own sauce.
Yeah, but...
What do you want? What, like one of those little packets in there that you toss?
Yeah, packets and toss it with.
Yeah, all right. I mean...
Gardein does that for their wings.
Okay, I think it's fine. I'm just saying, like, you know, maybe it's like it's a blank canvas and they want you to do what you want to do with it, which I'm fine with. But it does... The thing is, if you look at the packaging, though, on the packaging, the picture on it, it looks like it was tossed in something. So, yeah, you're going to have to create that yourself. All right, Miko, what do you say we move on and do some vegan animal rights news?
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay, everybody, it is time for vegan animal rights news. First story, McDonald's CEO Chris Kempczinski went on CNBC this week to say that they will be bringing vegan options to the United States soon.
Finally.
I kind of thought this was going to happen. We know that McDonald's has been testing vegan burgers all over the world. They've been doing it in Germany, in Sweden, in Finland, in Australia. I even heard that they are testing a burger with the Beyond Burger in Canada. So I think this would really be game-changing if they brought it to the United States, because I think that McDonald's worldwide is the most recognizable name in fast food. I mean, they're disgusting and whatever, but I do think it's very recognizable, and I think that it would really be saying something if they introduced a vegan burger in the United States.
Plus, I think it would be a burger of an entirely different quality that people would actually come there for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, honestly, I think if they made a burger with the Beyond Burger, it would probably be better than the shitty burgers that they use now. You know, I love that Beyond Burger. It's delicious. It's packed with flavor. I think people would enjoy it more than the crap, you know, the Big Mac or whatever the hell that they eat. So I really hope this happens soon. I know we're in the middle of a pandemic. A lot of restaurants are closed or have very limited operations, but I think maybe later this year or early next year, we could see this happen. So when it does, we'll talk about it on the show and give you all the updates, but very exciting that McDonald's is choosing to do this finally, finally. Okay, next story. There was a great article in the Washington Post saying that due to the shortages in animal products at the supermarket, that people have been searching online for egg-free baking tips. I guess there's a shortage on eggs and there's all this renewed interest in how to bake without eggs. And so they had this great article talking about all the things that you can use. I just think that this is really good and that people are thinking outside the box. I mean, you don't need eggs to bake. Miko and I bake all the time. Obviously, we don't use eggs. The only reason why people use eggs in baking is to bind the ingredients, but there's so many other things that you could use. You can use applesauce. You can use bananas. You can use flax seeds. You can use egg replacer, which is a product you can buy at Whole Foods. Some people use aquafaba. And your stuff comes out just as good. I mean, you don't, in terms of baking, you don't have to suffer anything if it's vegan. I mean, vegan cakes and cookies and muffins and brownies are better than the original stuff. So if you're worried about being vegan because you like to bake and you're worried about the egg situation, don't. It's super easy. And check out this article. It was by Becky Crystal in the Washington Post. Okay, next story. Because of the pandemic situation that we're in, Chicago health officials have suspended the licenses of live poultry markets.
They should make that permanent.
And they should make it everywhere. You know, we now know that we're almost 100% sure that the coronavirus jumped from animals to people at a wet market in China. But the thing is, we have our own wet markets, live markets right here in the United States. I know we have them in Los Angeles. I know they have them in New York. I did not know they had them in Chicago, but apparently they do. And these places should be shut down. This is a horrible situation for animals. Obviously, it creates a very dangerous situation in terms of diseases being able to spread. We shouldn't have these anywhere in the world. I wish that we could shut down these and factory farms as well. I think factory farms will be harder because they're run by multi-billion dollar corporations. And if Tyson can get the president to use the Defense Production Act to keep slaughterhouses open, I don't think we're going to be able to shut the factory farms down, but at least these live markets, which are smaller operations, I think that we should really, specifically in light of this pandemic, we should really look at, you know, just shutting this shit down for good. Thank you, Chicago. Okay, next story. Olympic medalists Michael Phelps and Ali Raisman are going to be appearing on Silk vegan milk cartons.
That's very cool.
I think this is so fucking cool because this is a tradition that goes back for decades with Olympians appearing on food. I mean, before she became Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner was on the Wheaties box. That was in the 70s. So I think that this is such a sign of the times to have Olympic medalists on, I mean, Wheaties, I guess, are vegan. So Bruce Jenner was on a vegan product. But this is different because this is a vegan alternative to milk. And I think putting Olympians on, putting Olympians on boxes or cartons, whatever, of vegan milk, I think is really a sign of the times. It reminds me of the Game Changers movie, which was all about athletes, you know, going plant-based in order to perform at their highest levels. And that's what this says to me. So I'm super excited about this. I have no idea if these two people are vegan or what their deal is, but I'm glad that they're promoting vegan products. That's awesome. Okay, next story. Lizzo is in the news. She took to TikTok to share a vegan recipe that she's been making while she's been sheltering in place, and it is a spicy vegan version of McDonald's McChicken sandwich.
I'm going to try to make this.
I mean, this is so cool. I love Lizzo. Okay, I love her music. I love everything that she's about. I live for her. Now, it says that she uses that Frank's Red Hot sauce. You use that
stuff.
We have
that, yep.
Frank's Red Hot sauce is a buffalo sauce, and it's vegan just by default. And so if you use that, you know, in your cooking, you can make anything kind of taste like buffalo sauce. You can do like vegan chicken wings or whatever. But it doesn't say what the chicken was that she used. I wonder if she used Gardein. That's probably the best. Think that would be the best for something like this?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. But Lizzo, again, don't know if Lizzo's vegan. Don't know whatever. But Lizzo, thank you. This is great. I love that she's promoting, you know, vegan alternatives to a chicken sandwich on her TikTok. That's awesome. Okay, and my last story of the week. This is kind of a sad story, but I like to end usually on a happy story. I should have ended on the Lizzo shit, but okay. There is new research that shows that owners, or I should say companions, who tug on their dog's leashes, that they risk injuring the dog's necks and that it can create difficulty for breathing for the animals. And I bring it up because before the pandemic, I mean, Miko and I used to run around Silver Lake Reservoir, which is a big dog area. There's a big dog park, and we'd see people. And I'd see people, you know, sometimes tugging on their dog's leash. And you can tell that the dog is uncomfortable. I mean, they said that, like, it can exert a similar force to that of a tourniquet. It says that when a dog, like lunges and, you know, they're attached to this leash, that the force could be even 6 times greater than just walking on the leash. And they're saying that experts recommend either using a very loose lead, which if you have a dog that's prone to like running away or chasing things, I don't know if that's going to work. Or they said what's better is to use a harness.
I was just going to say, because it distributes the pulling energy to like the shoulders.
Right. So I'm just saying, if you have a dog, you know, you live with a dog, maybe a harness is a better choice than, you know, the traditional collar and leash. And, you know, like I said, like I've seen things, you know, and I've never lived with dogs, so I don't really know if I'm one to necessarily give advice or talk about this, but I've definitely seen things when we've been running and walking around the reservoir, and you'll see people like yanking on their dog's leash, and the dog looks like, I saw one time that this person was using, I think it's called the gentle leader, which is like a leash that goes around the snoot of the dog. And it like became loose and it was like getting in the dog's mouth. And it was like, you could just tell the dog was like, this is uncomfortable to watch. And if it's uncomfortable for me to watch, I'm sure it's even 100 times more uncomfortable for your animal. So maybe a harness is the way to go.
If we had a dog, I would absolutely go with the harness.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, do you know, you've lived with dogs.
Yeah.
Do you know, is a harness something that doesn't matter what size the dog is? I mean, if you have like a huge like German Shepherd, can you still use a harness?
Yeah, I'm sure they make them just different sizes for different dogs.
Okay, cool. So just a word, you know, to all of our listeners who might have dogs, just something to consider. I found this article in the Daily Mail, so you can check it out if you want. Okay, Miko, with that, we have come to the end of another show.
No more stories?
No more stories this week. You'll have to wait till last week, or till next week, rather. But until then, I want to thank all of our loyal listeners. We love doing the show, and we love you guys. Again, if you would consider leaving us a review and subscribing on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts, we'd be ever so grateful for that. And if you want to catch up with me and Miko during the week, you can do so on Twitter. I am at Vegan Ari, Miko is at Miko Alon, or use our hashtag Vegan Ari Show. And if we don't hear from you during the week, we will talk to you next weekend. Stay safe, everybody. Stay healthy and have a great week. Bye-bye.
And thank you to everyone who has tweeted about the show this past week.
Thank you so much. That Seriously, we so appreciate all the shout outs on Twitter and on Facebook too. So thank you for that. And if you haven't done it yet and you want to consider it, we'd be really appreciative. So thank you.
It's as easy as retweet.
That's right. All right. Thank you everyone again. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye guys. I want you to